Cape Talk. Family Matters.
I want to have a conversation today about Ritalin and whether the drug, which is used to manage some cases of ADD and ADHD, is in fact being used or abused in quite different circumstances. And really, the spark for this segment came from the Facebook group, The Village. I have mentioned it before. It's a fantastic resource for parents, really a place to share experiences, to find support from one another, to talk about some of the big parenting challenges, particularly for teens and tweens and even into young adulthood. And a few weeks ago, someone posted a message there voicing concern about this issue, about the use of Ritalin by children for purposes other than managing attention deficit disorder or ADHD. And the person who posted this message essentially had encountered a matric student who'd been prescribed the drug by their GP to help him get better results in his exams. There was no history of an ADD diagnosis whatsoever. It hadn't been recommended by a psychologist. It was something that was being used purely as an exam aid. And really, that initial post unleashed such a storm of response from parents. And, I thought it was worth picking up on the show. Some of them questioning the safety of that kind of move. Also, its fairness in the exam setting. A lot of parents talking about their own battle with the decision to have their kids take Ritalin or not take Ritalin, and talking about the fact that apparently this is relatively common practice at universities. Certainly it came through very strongly on that feed, but even in high schools, using the drug for the purposes of getting better exam results. And the question was asked, is this what we've come to? Is the educational space this competitive that these are the lengths we will go to help our kids get that extra edge, to get the extra mark, to get them that place at university or whatever it may be? I'm fascinated to hear some input today from our guests who are joining us on the line. Dr. Renata Skuman is a psychiatrist and Margie Barry is an educational psychologist. Welcome both of you to the show and thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Pippa. Good afternoon, listeners.
Dr. Renata Skuman and Margie Barry, nice to have you with us as well.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'd also just like to invite our listeners to join in if they would like to share a perspective, talk about what they've seen in practice at schools and universities, how they've been affected by this issue. The number to dial is 021-446-0567. You can also leave a voice note on WhatsApp, 072-567-1567, or you're welcome to send an SMS to 31567. Renata, as a medical doctor, I think an important starting point is to talk about Ritalin and how it works and how it's intended to work medically. Can you just sketch that for us in very broad layman's terms?
Yes. Now, Ritalin, or methylphenidate, which is the active substance, is what we call a noradrenergic dopaminergic reuptake inhibitor, which that means is the noradrenaline and the dopamine you normally would produce in your brain is usually broken down again, but we prevent that or delay that process of reuptake so that it can function more actively in your frontal lobe then, which then leads to two things. Dopamine helps you to focus at the task at hand, and noradrenaline helps you to prevent distractibility. So it's almost stepping on the brake cables of the brain to prevent the mind from wandering and to prevent you from doing impulsive things. Now, that isn't someone that has a deficit of the medication or from the neurotransmitters, for specifically someone, for example, with ADHD. I think before we even continue the conversation, maybe just a very, very important statement to make, that the use of any medication is a personal choice, and it's not supported by us as psychiatrists. That's part of the Psychiatric Association. And all medical healthcare professionals have a professional duty to do a comprehensive assessment and establish an accurate diagnosis prior to prescribing any medication, especially also for ADHD.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also not a drug to be taken lightly, Renata. I mean, I know there are some doctors who choose not to prescribe it at all, who have concerns about its impact.
Yeah, it's not only a matter of that they're concerned about the impact. I think some doctors don't prescribe it with very good reason that they do not have the time. Say, for example, a general practitioner to do a comprehensive assessment. You can't do a comprehensive diagnosis in 15 minutes. So it's something that we actually feel should be diagnosed at specialist level, either a pediatrician or a psychiatrist, to initiate treatment, and thereafter it can follow it up at GPs. Once again, if you use the medication without the diagnosis, then it can be potentially bad side effects. But if you have a diagnosis, then we're normalizing levels, so then there is not such severe side effects. And so, for example, a child with ADHD might have less common or less severe side effects like headache or a little bit appetite suppression, especially in the beginning, or can struggle a bit with sleeping if you use it too late in the day. But in people without ADHD, and especially then people that's using it in illicit ways or irresponsible ways, too high the dose, for example, can run into trouble with even cardiovascular side effects and irritability and heart problems and, you know, tic disorders, etc. So using it when you do not have the diagnosis can be potentially dangerous.
I guess you've just answered my next question, which was your response to one parent's post that, yes, my child is using it and it's helped them tremendously in their varsity exams. What's the big deal? Well, you've just told us what the big deal could be if its use is not monitored properly. And proper monitoring is very much part of the process of a proper diagnosis when it's being used for someone who has a deficit.
Absolutely. And there's two things that I maybe want to comment on. The one is about side effects and the one is about efficacy in people that do not have ADHD. The one thing a lot of university students, because of the pressure, and I say university here, yeah, but we're also referring to senior high school students, so grade 10, 11, 12. There is tremendous pressure. So they use the medication for these reasons. They feel anxious. They're scared of not living up to the standards. They experience the pressure either from the peers or the parents or from the teachers, and they use it then to cope. But in the meantime, it's the anxiety that caused them not to be able to concentrate, because anxiety is one of the biggest reasons why we struggle to focus. And then the medication can potentially make them more anxious and even cause panic attacks. So instead of addressing the environment, instead of using coping skills or management or planning, we are now focusing on a quick fix, which doesn't necessarily have the outcome. Then also it's a perceived benefit, because the students then feel more awake, feel more alert, so they can study longer, but they're not necessarily more effective. And then if they study through the night, that can cause sleep deprivation, and sleep deprivation again impairs your performance the next day. Now, the perception that they have that they focus better and that they do study better, there is a small increase in alertness, a few percent. But what it translates to in practice in terms of your functioning is maybe a 2 or a 3% improvement, which do not translate really to school mark improvements or to grade improvements. So it might be minor, but it's more the additional effort then that the students put in, because they are a longer period behind the books. Mm. But they could have had the same results had they been regularly behind the books over an extended period of time.
Thank you for that perspective. Margie, if I may bring you in here as the educational psychologist, I mean, you are someone who would play a key role in the process of assessment and referral on for treatment of a child who presents genuinely with ADD or ADHD. Are you aware of cases such as we are discussing here where the drug is being utilized for other purposes, illicitly as it were, without a proper referral process that you would normally be involved in?
Very definitely. I think that it's too freely diagnosed, because these depths of diagnosis is what's important. It takes quite a long time to get a proper diagnosis. But also, there are students that persevere in giving trouble to other students who they know have Ritalin. And so at exam time, I've encountered students that have quite a lot of pressure on them to give the drug to other students.
Wow.
Because they believe it'll work for them. So there is definitely a use around exam time, both in high schools and at university and college level.
I'm interested to know whether there's also pressure from the level of either parents or teachers for the drug to be prescribed. Mm-hmm. Margie, is that something you've heard reported?
Yes. I'm actually also speaking on behalf of ADHASA, which is the Attention Deficit and Hyperactivity Support Group of South Africa.
Okay.
I work with them as well. And we get a lot of information through the support group that, in fact, rather than saying, go and have your child diagnosed, teachers often say, your child needs Ritalin. So that's quite a common thing that happens. And parents quite often pressure doctors into putting their child on Ritalin because they're concerned about their performance. So we have had instances where parents phone in and their child's in matric and they're sure they can get distinctions, but they think they need Ritalin to get there. So they try and phone into the support group to get some advice. Mm. So there is quite a lot of this idea around, but mostly this exists more in private schools and government schools in higher income areas. You know, the opposite exists in the poorer schools. There's such a deficit of children who need some kind of help who aren't getting any help that they need.
Yeah,
so yes, certainly. That is happening. It's happening a lot more, I think, in America. It's certainly happening here as well.
It's pretty scary stuff. I mean, there's a scary WhatsApp that's just come onto my screens from someone, understandably staying anonymous, saying, in my reckless early 20s, I snorted Coke as well as Ritalin a few times, and the effects of both were so similar, is the comment that they make. I know it's something that parents with children with a genuine diagnosis of ADD and ADHD struggle with as part of the decision-making process around Ritalin, is this comment that it's cocaine for kiddies. How would you respond to that person's message?
Can I come in here?
Renata, yes, please.
Yes, there was an article run by the Sunday Times last year which called it Kitty Cocaine and comparing it to a milder form of tic. And we had a strong position statement about that last year. There is people that's abusing it because, as I mentioned, it is considered a stimulant. So in people with normal brain functioning, if you use it, it can give you that feeling of well-being and increased alertness that you would get on the others. But that is the non-medical use of it. In people that have a lower level of the noradrenaline and dopamine, for example, adults or children with ADHD, this is normalizing levels. Now, if you look in Google, for example, if you go and Google between 2004 and 2012, there was a lot of people that's against medication and treatment and certain viewpoints, for example, Scientologists, etc., which is blatantly against the use of it, and the medication got a lot of negative flack. There's also this myth that the medication can cause addictive behavior, like later substance use. That is not the case. If you look at real scientific research over years and years, untreated ADHD make children more impulsive, and therefore they might take wrong life decisions and get involved with the wrong friends or substances, where the proper treatment of ADHD actually protect them against it. So, for example, as the listener said, it's more likely than part of the substance behavior. It's not because of the medication that he got addicted to it. So it's really important to look at it. And once again, we are not at all saying that all kids with ADHD has to have medication, because it's not the only answer. You need to look at therapy as well. You need to look at life skills as well. You need to look at the ears and at the eyes and at occupational therapy and everything they need. Medication is supporting that in terms of normalizing the neurotransmitters. But we cannot compare a prescribed medication to a substance of illegal or illicit use, say, for example, tic. So the word stimulant, yes, there is similarities in how the medication is working, but in the way it's working, it's a low dose, it is tested, it's safe levels, and it will definitely not make your child prone to substance abuse. But there is people that is misusing it. And if we look at local studies, there's a few local studies on the misuse of the medication amongst college students. There was a study, Tikkies, and even here at Stellenbosch. And they found that some students, up to 7 to 8%, have used this medication without the script, so without a proper diagnosis, without a proper assessment, wherever they might get the medication from a GP or from a friend. But only 1 or 2% of those students also experiment with other drugs. So there's also this perception or statement that was made in the media, in the Sunday Times article specifically, that Ritalin might be a gateway drug. In people without ADHD, yes, it can be an entry as a gateway drug that we see with all other kinds of substances as well. But in a person with ADHD, it's definitely, we have not seen this being a gateway drug in any kind.
Thank you for that explanation. I want to bring in one of the moms who's called through, Mel on the line from Somerset West, because Mel, we chatted by email before the show, and one of the things you flagged was that this perception and misperception about the so-called kiddie cocaine accusation makes it really difficult for moms like you who've got children with a definite diagnosis of ADHD on the one hand and ADD in another child. child, for whom Ritalin has actually been a lifesaver, were the words that you used. Good afternoon.
Hi there. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I think that when your child has Asperger's or they've got autism or they've got Tourette, you know, there's a wide support and almost like an empathy for you. When your child has got ADHD, you almost feel like you're just that parent that's made it up and it's actually not a true diagnosis, and you either want them to do really well or you're a tiger mom or you're a lazy mom, or it's not really taken seriously or acknowledged. And being the mother of a child with ADHD, and often more than one child because there is a genetic component, is very challenging. So in the beginning, you kind of struggle along at school and you're trying to get them through, and you're faced with various challenges, and you know, invariably they get OT and they're at therapy and they're at extra everything. And then eventually you get to a point where you think something's missing. You know, something's not right. And for me, that came so late because of the constant accusation and judgment of other mothers of like, oh, kiddie cocaine and the child's going to be a drug addict and, you know, all those kind of things. So I was a parent who almost underdiagnosed and waited too long to put my child on meds.
That's a fascinating comment, that it actually, that sense of the judgment made you wait longer than perhaps you should have. The very fact that there is an ADHD support group, Margie's representing at Haas, it tells me, Margie, that what Mel's just described is probably not an isolated experience.
Not at all. Parents of children with ADHD have a very tough time. Parents who don't have children with ADHD have no idea how hard it is to parent these beautiful children, because that's what they are. And they get a lot of judgment from teachers who make comments like, don't you ever discipline your child? Because they often look like they've received no discipline and that they've got no manners. But it's just part of the impulsivity and part of the disorder. So I really take my hat to parents who have got it right with their ADHD children. So very well done. There is a lot of judgment, unfortunately. And it goes along with the fact that there has been a lot of pressure on parents with ADHD to rather discipline their child and teach their child manners and all the rest, instead of going the treatment route.
Interesting.
And the fact that there are a number of things you need to get it right in the end. And one of the most lacking things is actually the education of parents and the education of teachers. Because who really knows what ADHD is? And this is where the support group comes in and plays a very strong role. And we run workshops on ADHD for parents of children with ADHD, because as Dr. Renata Stillman correctly said, medication is one of the treatments, but you also often need just to teach them how to get organized or some kind of cognitive skills. But there's a lot else that goes with getting the ADHD child to cope properly. And that's where we have parent conferences and teacher conferences, because teachers often don't get it. They don't realize that these children operate differently, that they have to move in the classroom. And it's so education is probably the most important thing. And in fact, we've got a conference on the 18th of November.
I'm going to ask you to pause there, Margie, and tell me about that conference in just a few moments. If I may, I'm happy to extend the conversation after the news for a couple more minutes, because there's still several messages and questions that I want to reflect. But we must just break away to get the latest Eyewitness News headlines. Apologies, I'm a little bit late. Wesley Peterson
on Cape Talk.
Thanks so much, Wesley, and greetings, John Matham.
Hello, Pippa. We'll be having a look at the dilemma facing the Speaker, Baleka Mbete. I'm quite sure that she wants a secret vote, but she's struggling to come up with rational reasons why it should be so, given the Constitutional Court ruling. We'll look at that. We're talking to the city about alternative uses of water and plumbing those into your house. There is a bylaw against it, so in the light of the current water crisis, is that being relaxed? Is that being policed? What exactly is it? Not confirmed, but apparently there is a proposal to demolish those absolutely so Musenberg-coloured bathing huts on the beach. So we'll talk about that. I suspect this is going to get some people very, very angry. Robben Island is proceeding with a programme to kill the fallow deer, which are on the island, despite the fact that there have been individuals with land available saying, rather give them to us and we'll put them on that land than kill them. And then perhaps the conversation that I'm most looking forward to is there's this policy on drugs and the drug war and so on in Cape Town at the moment, started today. And I'm talking to an ex-undercover policeman from the UK. He was undercover for 14 years, and that experience made him rethink, and he now argues very, 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 very vehemently for the regulation of drug sales rather than the situation as it pertains in most countries.
I'm going to his talk on Thursday night. Really looking forward to that evening, and I'm looking forward to listening to that interview. Thanks so much, John Matham.
Cape Talk. Send Pepper a voice note now on 072-567-1567.
I feel very passionately about the overuse of Ritalin. When my son was diagnosed with ADHD and they said that he should use Ritalin, and I refused to give it to him, and I was told that he would never get to matric, and if he did, he wouldn't pass, and he ended up passing with a 74% aggregate. So, rather love your children and give them the attention that they need, and they don't need Ritalin.
Well, some children do benefit from Ritalin. I think it has to be said that I've had multiple emails from moms talking about the fact that it has worked for their children in cases of a proper diagnosis where it was genuinely called for. What led us into this conversation today was the question of whether it's being used in other cases as a stimulant to abate basically one's performance in an exam setting. I've had one person who has sent me a WhatsApp saying that the going rate at my university for 20 milligrams of long-lasting Ritalin is around 100 rand a tablet. My question is, how widespread is that practice? That's what I'm really trying to get to the heart of today. Is this something of epidemic proportions? Is this a case of a handful of students in privileged settings who can afford to pay that kind of money for the drug who are abusing it in this way? Is it something that you've seen at your tertiary institution? If there are any students listening, I'd love to hear from you on 021-446-0567. Gail has been waiting very patiently to speak to us. Gail in Plumstead, thanks so much. And yes. You've had experience of a child with Ritalin.
With Ritalin. Yes, but I'm not speaking against about what you are actually speaking. I'm speaking about how it helped my son.
Okay.
He was diagnosed with he didn't have ADHD. He had faculties didn't work in the same sync, like a cognitive way.
Okay.
And he was on Ritalin from grade before school till age about 12, and how he's excelled, and it benefited him so much. But it was all under instituted by the school. He was at Vista Nova, and they did all the medication, and I didn't have it at home, and it was wonderful. But he worked, and he's got his degree today. So,
fantastic.
I mean, it does help.
Gail, thanks for sharing that and reminding us that really there are two separate conversations going on here, and this is not a Ritalin bashing session, and this is not saying that nobody should be on it. The question we've really been talking about is whether it is being misused in the university setting, at high school level, etc. And I'm delighted to say that we do have a student on the line, Claire, who can share with us what she has seen. Claire, thanks so much for being prepared to talk to me. How common would you say this practice is? Do you know of other students? Are you aware of friends, for example, who use the drug in this way?
Hi, Pippa. It's so easy to get it nowadays at your GP. You just walk in and say that you're struggling to concentrate and exams are tough. And university is tough, so I do understand. Like I said to you, people are on weekends grinding it up with their mother's Jamie Oliver grinders and sniffing it to get high. That's people that are close to me, people that I know. And PBR, people kind of just give it out amongst each other. Like, if you were lucky enough to get it from the doctor and your parents paid for it, maybe even medical aid paid for it, like, we all get together and sniff it, you know. It's frightening. But then I have to add, on the other hand, someone very close to me never had problems studying, but in their final year in honours, really struggled in June, July, and Ritalin basically got them through the year, and they were able to complete their degree. So I do think in the right places, it can be very helpful, but it somehow needs to be monitored. And like, how do you monitor university students?
Yeah, if you could answer that question, you could make a mess clear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worrying what you've described, the level of abuse, the fact that you say it's common, and that it's not even a case of people buying it illicitly. It's the case of a GP having prescribed the drug is what scares me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Claire, thanks very much for that frank description. I really do appreciate hearing from somebody who's witnessed it at first hand. I want to bring in psychiatrist Dr. Renata Schumann in response to what Claire's just described. Renata, GP, walk into the GP's office, tell the GP I'm struggling to concentrate, and the GP writes a script for Ritalin. It shouldn't be happening that easily, should it?
No, it should not happen at all. Yeah, I'm actually a bit speechless. I'm aware of it. It does happen, especially in the privileged areas, especially in Cape Town area and Stellenbosch area, around specific schools. We know that there's a lot of pressure. And GPs sometimes might feel, yeah, well, but they are doing the person good in front of him at that moment, addressing the need. And if he doesn't do it, the person just go to someone else of his colleagues. The end, that GP needs to live with his conscience. I can't take a decision for that person. Once again, from the Psychiatric Association, we have published guidelines about a month ago on the management of ADHD, and we strongly say that the diagnosis should be made at specialist level and treatment should be initiated by a specialist. We can't enforce that in any way. The medical schemes might tighten up definitely on that in terms of for the benefit for a specific patient, but also for society as whole, and also for people that really suffers from ADHD, not to dilute the diagnosis and to create all the queries of is this real or not. I would be very, very worried if my child get medication like this from a GP without a proper assessment, like I would feel about any condition. I don't want my child to be on medication for a peptic ulcer if my child doesn't have a peptic ulcer. So it's the same thing, and I think it all boils down to responsibility, individual responsible behavior, but also responsible behavior by medical professionals, and then also to diagnostic accuracy. But in the end, it's easy to Google symptoms. It's easy to go to the doctor and to say, I experience X, Y, and Z, and present yourself as if you have a real problem. But the other thing, just to bear in mind, that if we look at concentration difficulties, there's many, many other conditions and problems that can mask with concentration difficulties, anxiety, depression, poor sleep, sleep apnea, substance use, misuse of technology. ADHD is very low down on the list. So make sure that the real problem is being addressed so that you can function to the best of your ability within the natural environment that you should be without having to use cognitive doping, if we can call it that, if you do not have ADHD.
Dr. Renata Schumann, thank you so much for your contribution to the conversation today. Dr. Renata Schumann is a psychiatrist, so a very knowledgeable medical perspective there. I want to give Margie Barry a chance to share some closing thoughts with us as well. Margie being an educational psychologist and also the chair of the ADHA support group in South Africa. Margie, I mean, it's very worrying what we heard Claire describing about the level of abuse happening, certainly at her university. And we've heard Renata certainly making a very clear case for why this drug needs to be very carefully managed with a very specific diagnosis that takes a long and exhaustive process to get to in the first place. From an educational psychologist's perspective, the one thing we haven't really spoken about is the fairness of this abuse. I've had somebody saying it's just not fair that some kids who can afford it should be able to boost their performance. It's like a sportsman taking performance-enhancing drugs. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Absolutely. I think we're actually dealing with an ethical and moral dilemma that we have here, because not only is it important to make sure that everything's been done for the good of people and not to harm, but there's also the issue of justice, and that's a part of the pillars of ethics. So is it fair if one child does it and another doesn't? And in that sense, it should really be monitored. I think Renata has done a wonderful job in developing guidelines for adult ADHD diagnosis and treatment. And I think they're a long way to helping create the necessary diagnoses that actually happen and creating awareness, certainly amongst the medical professionals. And I agree, diagnosis is the most important thing. We've got a lot of trauma in this country at the moment. And so there are a lot more people being diagnosed with ADHD instead of the trauma. Post-stress
a post-traumatic stress disorder can often mimic ADHD symptoms. So that's something to look out for. And also there are anxiety and other comorbid disorders. So very often ADHD comes with another disorder, like a learning disability, which I have a lot to do with.
Yep.
So it's so important that a highly professional person who has in-depth knowledge of all of these things does the diagnosis, because often you need to treat both disorders at the same time. It's often not just one thing. It's not just ADHD you're talking about. But getting back to medication is one part of the whole system. And I would just like to say that while we are on the subject of the misuse of Ritalin, the use of Ritalin is also something that different parents disagree on.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is to educate parents as to what ADHD is, regardless of whether their child is medicated or not. And even more importantly, to educate teachers. And I spend so much time at schools where teachers say, I'm not going to accommodate this. They must fit in or go somewhere else. And there's nowhere else for these children to go. And they land up dropping out of school so often. Mm. So just as misuse by people who don't need it, treatment in some form, whether it's medication or other things, is so important for the people with ADHD. And that's actually what we spend a lot of time doing.
Mm.
And may I just mention the support group?
Please do. I was going to ask you to conclude because with that information. But before we get there, just one quick question.
Yes.
Somebody's asked anonymously, yes. I do think that perhaps my child might have ADHD. Where do I go to start the process of testing and finding out if they do? What would you suggest to that parent?
You could start the process by contacting the support group.
Great. So
we
let's
have a referral list of professionals that we send to that we know do a very detailed diagnosis.
Fantastic. And so then without further ado, Margie, how do we contact the support group?
Okay. The national office is in Joburg. It's 011-888-7655.
888-7655. Okay. In Joburg.
011. Yes. Then we have a website, which is www.adhasa, that's adhasa.co.za.
Okay.
And then we have an email address, which is info@adhasa.co.za.
Great. So that's a fantastic
place to start. We do have a conference in Cape Town, which is on the 18th of November for parents and teachers. Our keynote speaker is Professor Andre Fenter. And we've had a lot of requests from Cape Town to bring us there, because there's nothing important as creating awareness, understanding of the condition, and there are so many things you can do, and the medical approach is part of it. And I will be asking Renata Skimmon to present at one of our next workshops, because I believe that the difference making in the whole ADHD scene is fantastic.
Margie Barry, thanks so much for joining us today. Educational psychologist and chairperson of ADHASA. So adhasa.co.za is the website you're looking for. info@adhasa.co.za if you'd like to send an email. And to that parent worrying about the diagnosis, well, that's at least a place for you to start. And I hope you find good resources on that site. We must move on. Seth in Somerset West, I'm going to take your call very quickly. We've got a still play secret, something, fit that in at some point. But Seth, you want to talk about the fact that ADHD and other conditions sometimes have similar symptoms.
Yes, hi, Papa. My grandson was in his very early years in grade one and grade two. The teachers actually got very upset with him because they said he's ADHD and they just wanted to ram him full of Ritalin. And meanwhile, he was actually on the autistic spectrum.
Wow.
And teachers don't understand what to look for. Now, I don't know whether that is part of the education process for teachers in the early years of school.
Seth, it's a very important point you've raised. Thank you so much. And it was something that Renata mentioned, that it just reinforces why it's so important that this drug be used very carefully under circumstances with a very, very clear diagnosis, which is something that takes a great deal of time to go through. Thank you, Seth, and good luck to your grandson. For now, let me just finish. I'll try and make some space for a few more messages if we can at the end of the show. But here's an SMS from Cindy that I really think is worth sharing with you. Excuse me. Cindy says, as the parent of a child who really needs Ritalin for managing his ADHD, I hate this. It makes it so much harder to explain what was an immensely difficult decision for us, which we did not take lightly. So many people judge us already for putting our son on this drug, even though it has literally transformed his school experience and improved his life prospects in every way. I don't think it's fair or safe that people should use it lightly as a performance-enhancing drug without a diagnosed medical need for it. Cindy, I couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for your message.